Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 305. I am Steve Borsch, and I am on with the gang like Tim Elliott.
Wow, this is dramatic.
Graham Thickens.
Happy spring.
And Phil Wilson.
Yes, such spring-like music.
Yeah, isn't it
though? Can't you just see the little nymphs in their news van?
I was trolling around some Creative Commons music and found this, and I thought, man, it just sounds like it's the beginning of a movie trailer, so thought I'd grab it.
Yeah, for sure.
Just to be different. Now, Phil, you're down at live from Google DevFest?
We're at DevFest. I'm at DevFest, yes, at the Schultz Hall on St. Thomas campus downtown. Cool. Where there is free parking on the street. This is what I love about downtown on the weekend. Yes. But anyway, down for this full day of things to cover everything from Android to wearables, the Chrome and cloud stuff, design and
Uh-oh.
I think we lost Phil.
We lost Phil, his live.
Yeah. Well, so he's down. Yeah, he's down there, but he's on his iPhone on Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, there you are. Are you back?
Oh, there he is. There he is.
We lost you, buddy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Am I here now?
Yeah, you're here now.
Wow.
Okay. What did you hear from me last?
About the parking, and that was it.
So the important stuff.
What about the donuts? Come on, that's the what donut. We want to know.
Yeah. Already had two, thank you. Yes,
they were pretty good.
They were good, but no. Kicking things off this morning about 8:45 with Martin Omander, who's going to do a keynote on the aspirin for the developer soul. Not really sure what that is. So we'll look forward to that. But I'm really kind of looking forward to the Android presentation at 10 with Aaron Goldberg, who works for us at BuzzFeed. Out in Colorado, flew in for this to talk a little bit about Android Lollipop. So I'm pretty excited about that. Oh, cool. He's just a whip smart guy, and one of my colleagues and friends. When we were out in New York not too long ago, we actually went to a Louis C.K. show together. So
fun! In that same club, to see him. On the same club that is on his show. In that little club that you go downstairs.
No, a little bit bigger venue, Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a hair bigger.
So it was really small. Like a really small, but that was kind of our crazy, hey, let's go to see Louis C.K., buying scalp tickets and things like that. So, but it's a full day here at Schultz Hall, so we're looking forward to a whole lot of good stuff. So we'll have a little recap for you. Cool. Next week on the shoe.
All right. And then you know how Louis C.K. got there, didn't you? Madison Square Garden. He practiced. No, that's actually Carnegie Hall. I know. That's okay. All right. Well,
you're really going to go that far for a joke, Steve. You really got
it. It was bad. Yeah, there. Sorry. I apologize to everyone who just lost 30 seconds of their lives because of that. All right. Okay. Hey, did anybody go to MEMA?
Total silence.
Crickets. Okay.
No, I guess not.
I guess not. So I guess we'll take that off the show notes. Okay. IoT Fuse. Anybody go to IoT Fuse? Oh, yeah, that's right. I was one of the co-organizers, so I was there. Graham was there. Phil was there.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Tim's name badge was there. Unfortunately, those doggone clients of yours get in the way.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man, you got
to
work.
It's hard to get away,
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you live way the hell down in Lakeville. It's anyway, true. Yeah, that was a great. It was
an excuse, not an excuse. Yeah, I made the scene.
Well,
how was it?
Well, it was a sellout event. We'll be posting some content online here next week, and it was kicked off by Joel Young, who's the CTO at Digi International, who just did a great job kicking the event off and really covered it well. What'd you think, Graham?
Oh, I thought he was excellent, and I told him so afterwards. Yeah, it was a great overview of IoT, kind of where it came from and where it's going, and got in one of the themes of the show. I think don't be a solution looking for a problem. We don't need more boxes. We need more problem solved, and think of it from that standpoint. And I love this point about, you know, if your boss sent you here telling you we need an IoT strategy, he said, that's wrong, the wrong approach. He said, it's not a market. It's a, you know, it's a trend or, right, or a movement as it was described by others. So yeah, he set the stage really well. And,
I probably would, at this point in time with the, where IoT is in its evolution, I think there's still plenty of coming up with solutions to problems don't exist. I think that there's a lot of experimentation still going on. So I don't necessarily think, I think that's from an entrepreneurial standpoint, yeah, that's clearly the way to go. But I think from an experimental lab sort of standpoint, just keep throwing shit against the wall, see what sticks. So I'm still very much enamored by that part of the IoT space. So,
oh yeah, there were a ton of makers at this event for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of young, engineering students or recent grads, from the university and elsewhere that attended. But you know what struck me about the thing is that the age range, the demographics of the audience was really, diverse. I mean, there were a lot of old guys there too. It wasn't just, young tinkerers at this thing. It was a whole mix.
It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a thing that kind of impressed us too, was everything from, like you just said, recent students all the way up to, there was one guy there that had actually come in from Redwood City, and he sort of crashed the party, and we ended up letting him in because, he's there to scope out events and all that. And he ended up giving us some money at the end, but, he was there frankly to look for people doing innovative things and see if he could fund them, I suppose.
Well, yeah, there were some investor types there and there were some academics but I heard people saying they thought it was the best event they've been to in a long time. I think it got, excellent reviews overall and great networking and lots of stuff going on. I mean, four different tracks, is that the frustration of not being able to be in two or three places at once is always ever present at an event like this, where there's four rooms going on and you're crisscrossing and trying to jump around and find, okay, where's this other event? But, the stuff that was going on in the hallways was, as any good conference is as valuable as the content itself,
Yep.
So there was a lot of hallway action.
Well, and there was even stuff like a young woman, Christina Devarge, I think is how she pronounces her last name. I just stopped because I wanted to shoot video of her tweet skirt when she was outside the one of the halls, and she was going to do an ad hoc session in the afternoon. And she's a real hardcore coder. I mean, maybe not hardcore, but she's a real good coder. And she created this tweet skirt. And I'll put some link in the show notes to the video I shot and also to her Twitter feed because you can see some of that. But, there are just stuff like that. And actually, for everyone who complains that there are no women in tech, check out her stuff.
Well, yeah, but there's still you still look around that room. There's still far too few women in the technology space. Way too few people. But also the next time you see Christine, ask her about the RFID chip she has embedded in her hand. So,
well, yeah, okay, I will.
She's hardcore. She is very all hardcore. Right. Yeah. All right. So, but she is, really smart woman.
Well, I'm glad I shot that video because at the end of while she was giving her ad hoc session, she said, yeah, and the skirt's actually not working right now. So at the end, I was able to get up there and plug in my laptop and show the video of 25 seconds, but you could see it actually working. So
very nice.
That was cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I'd let you close to my daughter's skirt, but other than that.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing hotter than a guy my age. Full figured. It's just, the young women are all over me wearing like a their, suit. Yeah.
Throwing yeah. themselves at themselves. Right. At you. I know it's
that's
true.
Right. Especially because I drive a Prius. They just,
I want to see you in a
bad magnet.
I want to see you in a tweet kilt.
a tweet kill.
That would be good. Go. Well, you know, my, you know, part of my heritage is Fitzgerald, a little Irish there. So
yeah.
Yeah. Close. So Piranha Pool, did somebody go to this?
No. No, yeah, last year. Yeah. Last year at Minibar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was there. Yeah.
It's back.
They're bringing it back.
Yep. Yep. So it'll be at Minibar again this year. I like that event. That was very interesting.
Take on Shark Tank and, yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I don't know if anybody actually got a check out of last year's event or not. I didn't follow up on that.
Yeah,
but
I didn't either.
Wouldn't somebody have to have gotten a check? Didn't the whole reason to get somebody to.
Well, yeah. That's kind of how it works on Shark Tank, I guess. But you can turn down offers too, and people do that all the time. I know one startup that got kind of trashed was 4Cubed, the online poker outfit, which was fairly well established, and I'm certain they didn't get a check out of it. Because I was in contact with them, you know, for several months after that. But they did land $2 million from one of the Indian tribes. So they've done okay, you know, despite Piranha Pool. But the other startups, I can't remember. I think there were four. And I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember what the other three were. But I never actually heard that any of them got a check from from any of the four or five panelists. But anyway, it's fun. It was well put on by Jeff Robbins, moderated it, and I think came up with the idea. He's a startup attorney, and bringing it back. It was in the Best Buy Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine they'll do it there again this year.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great venue. Anybody listening to this, if you have not gone to Minibar, it's really a wonderful event, and Best Buy is a fabulous host. They've got a great facility for this, and they also have that huge auditorium that seats, what do you think, guys, 600?
Something like that.
A lot of people. And it's just a fun event. It's really
great. Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So Tim, our retail analyst, has to get his shaker of salt out and pour it in the target wound. So
a lot of news this week.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So why don't you recap it, pal?
Well, they've come to a settlement on the data breach, $10 million fund. It's apparently going to cost a lot more than that if you read their filings at the SEC. But this is what they're offering to consumers to kind of make up for any damages, and you have to prove that you were damaged. So you have to prove that there was some sort of a breach and it was related to Target and all of that. And they have forms that you fill out, and maybe you'll get some money to what is it, $10,000 an individual. So,
but you have to have proof that you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's damaged. Not just like you shop there with your debit card, like we all did. Hey, give me some free money.
That's right.
No, doesn't really.
Shoot, there goes my day. That's what I was planning to do this afternoon.
Darn yeah. That's what you think about, right? But you have to prove that you have some unauthorized charges on your debit or credit card. And, you know, you paid money to address those, blah, blah, blah. So, it's a step in the right direction.
And
there were a lot of requirements listed in order to qualify. And I wasn't clear from reading all of those, but it's like, do you have to have every single requirement or just one of those like six or seven requirements? Because if you have to have them all, that's a pretty high, requirement to meet.
No, I think you just have to prove that you were harmed in some way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I think the courts will determine what the damages are. If it's not clear.
Harmed in some way by
the data breach.
The data breach, yeah. Not yeah, harmed.
So you could prove
emotionally
that you're,
or scarred or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get it that.
Emotional damages.
Just in case.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to work. Just a guess.
You got to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then over on the Business Journal, there's sort of like the the rich CEO perk of the week story, where the new CEO gets use of the corporate jets. And I don't know. The guy's making $16 million. You think he would pay for his own first class or business class to wherever he needs to go? You know,
he needs a lesson from Hubert Joly. As you remember, riding in the back of Coach when I went out to CES a couple years ago, like in a couple months after he was hired, that was a very smart move.
It just sets a good example. You know, this is just, I don't know, they're treated like kings. Yep. And I know that there's some security concerns and whatnot, but I don't know. I think he could fly. I mean, if it's business stuff, I mean, this is for wherever he wants to go. So this could be personal trips too. But if it's company business, you know, it's company expense. But anyway, I just thought that was kind of one of those stories that to point out that the optics don't look good for that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Do you know that if there's 2,040 work hours in a year, that his hour, every hour is worth about $8,000?
Oh, geez.
And so if you figure that, you know, that's what his time is worth, for him to burn up two of those hours just standing around an airport waiting for a flight to go. Because with your own private aircraft, you drive up to Signature Airways and you walk out there and you hop on, and you're gone. Or I suppose Holman Field, but I don't know where their jet is. But you start to look at that. I mean that makes a corporate jet look a heck of a lot more attractive.
Yeah.
So it's the one thing that I sometimes
it's the visibility. It's a publicly traded company, and it's like, you're trying to save money and you walk onto a jet. It's the look. It's not
no, I know.
It's hard to sell the time saving element, especially when you have to lay off so many people and then turn around a week later and lay off the people that laid off the people. So yeah,
right. Well, that was classy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's not
uncommon, but at the same time, geez, Louise, that sucks. Hey, thanks for doing our dirty work. See ya.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. That's like all the people that were in Iowa that had to worked for IBM and had to train the folks coming in from India. And then once those folks were trained, they all got fired. Yeah. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
They also get almost a $2 billion tax break for exiting Canada. So that $5 billion hit that they're going to take, it's not quite as bad as it looked before.
Good. Yeah. Well, they got a ways to go. It looks like they're in more of a world of hurt than any of us thought. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Pioneer Press.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Man. Buyout firm, maybe next owner of Pioneer Press parent.
And I found that MinPost article from a couple of days back, too. It had a little bit more detail on it. And it looks like Cerberus, which I have some personal experience with, is also in the running, and they're just a demolition company.
Were they involved in the Kodak buyout when you were there?
No, Wamnet. So they took Wamnet apart.
Got it.
So yeah. So if that goes down, the Pioneer Press, as we know it, is over.
It's toast. Yeah.
The other guys, though, the guy that owns the Munch painting, that may turn into something. I don't know. That's a roll up. So that may actually be a better deal. But I don't know what you'd do with several hundred newspapers.
Well, it's 76 dailies and 140 weeklies. So it's a ton of properties.
But how many properties in the newspaper industry does Warren Buffett own?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean he's been buying up newspapers for quite some time.
Well, hopefully he gets involved.
Yeah, well, I mean maybe.
I think the problem here is that the way that we read news is way different, and I subscribe to newspapers, but they're national newspapers now.
Right.
The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. And I subscribe to those cuz it's the best quality journalism, and I'll run out and I'll get a Pioneer Press on Sunday or a Star Tribune or whatever. But, that doesn't really support them, an occasional Sunday newspaper.
Well, like I've said many times, and we've talked about too, is about Warren Buffett, by the way, has 69 newspapers. Right now. Yeah. He has been investing in, because basically they're so cheap. Anyway, the point is it's not so much newspapers going away as it is investigative journalism going away, because, you know, who's going to pay for, journalists to be on a story for a year, and uncover all the things that need to be uncovered.
Well, it's not just the time investment in getting a good investigation together. It's that all these media companies have interests in the commercial world for survival.
Right.
So they're loath to do any kind of investigative journalism, you know, especially if it involves, let's say that the Star Tribune had a thing on Cargill. I'm sure that there's some relationship between Cargill and the Star Tribune that, you know, might prevent them from doing something like that.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the thing that really kind of concerns me about investigative journalism. I think that online, non-corporate journalists,
like MenPost.
Yeah. Those are the ones where you're going to see those kind of in-depth stories come out, where they don't have as much or any involvement in the commercial side.
Well, that's why, you know, a lot of people poo-pooed Joel Kramer, the former publisher of the Star Tribune, who started MenPost, really kind of slammed him for doing this nonprofit directional sort of newspaper and online news outlet. And I got to tell you, I'm consistently impressed. Because I mean, I read MenPost every day. It's a good way to stay in touch. Of course, I also read City Pages, because it's an alternative way to stay in touch. But you know, to try to get a good 360 degree view of what's going on. So that's always a positive. Anyway, so the Nerdery, who is, by the way, one of our sponsors at IoT Fuse, and is doing some pretty interesting things, because I was sort of pigeonholing him in my mind toward specific things like web and web apps and all of that. But I gained a little education in how broad they are. And also this story about the Nerdery cutting 5% of its workforce that was in the Strib. I don't know who stuck that in.
Graham did. Yeah.
Okay. It kind of puts it in perspective, because, you know, a lot of times you'll read this stuff. You know, like here's the CEO, Tom O'Neill, the president, saying technology moves fast, forcing market demand to fluctuate. Well, Phil, I bet you know that well.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of developing apps, I mean, you got to stay 100% on top of what's going on. And, you have to be able to shift and bob and weave with client demand. So...
Well, does anyone know these 23 positions? I mean, it looks like most of them were developers. What sort of development is not in demand now?
It'd be interesting to find that out.
Are these like .NET developers or something? I mean, what
not
is
sure. It? Not sure. I was talking to some folks downstairs. I haven't had a chance to follow up with them, but I'll see if I can root around and find out who all got zipped. But that's too bad. It's
Windows phones guys. You know,
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't have enough gigs for those guys.
See, yeah, I just noticed
BlackBerry. That's it.
Yeah, BlackBerry developers. BlackBerry developers. Look out.
See, I just want to go off on a slight tangent here, and I apologize for this, but this is a big deal Minnesota story. Just up on the North Shore Drive, just north of Two Harbors, is a little area called Betty's Pies, which is kind of fancy now. And I just noticed when I went to this article that North Shore founder of Betty's Pies dies at 90.
Oh, Betty.
And I started going to Betty's Pies when I was 17. That's the first trip that I took up to the North Shore with my folks, and we stopped there. And then later on, I had adventures like being with my buddies parked in the Overlook in a Winnebago, literally 8 inches from going over the cliff there. Right, you know, it wasn't that big of a drop, but we rented this motorhome, and we stumbled over to Betty's Pies for breakfast, and they I don't think they wanted to let us in. She was there then cooking, and it was this tiny little shack. And anyway, I just, yeah, I mean, she was great. So,
wow, she'd bake 100 pies on Sunday.
Isn't that something?
Can you imagine that? 50 to 60 during a weekday.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Well, yeah, and it was funny.
When did she pass away? Was it on Pi Day?
She died Thursday night. No, Thursday. Come on.
She was a math major. A lot of people.
Come on, you guys. This is terribly serious.
And they were all round.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I was just kind of curious. I think that would be ironic, wouldn't you think?
It would be ironic. She made it through Pi Day. I'm sure she made, 200 pies that day.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
Went out with a bang.
Well, at any rate, yeah, she was kind of like my grandma, just a sweetie. Anyway, so I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, how were the pies? Were the pies good?
Oh, man. Well, why do you think I have to bulk up every winter?
Hey, on the drive over to Madison, there's a place called the Norsk Nook.
Oh, yeah.
Been to that place?
No.
Man, the pies there are incredible. Yep. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
I think it's the Norsky Nook, isn't it?
No,
I
call it.
Depends on how you pronounce it.
The Norsk Nook. Yeah. Anyway, it's.
Whatever. Yeah.
Another good pie place.
Yes, it is.
Say, Graham. Tim is not from Scandinavian roots like most people up here.
Like me. No.
Yeah. Australian.
Scandinavian. Yeah,
Australian Scandinavian.
But I know people who go there all the time and they swear by it. And it's not just the pies. I think it's like, the comfort food, the home cooking,
Yeah.
Mashed potatoes.
Okay, boys, step away from the wood chipper.
You know what one of my favorite pies is? Apple. And speaking of apple.
Oh, segue. Yeah, Apple plans web TV service.
I have no idea how we got off onto the whole pie tangent.
That was my fault. I apologize. But
looks like my prediction of the Apple TV is going to come true in this June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's going to be a platform.
It's going to be a set-top box. It's going to have apps.
Yep.
Looks like it's going to have Siri.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
The big news is their programming, though. They're in talks with everybody except for NBC, Comcast, apparently.
Right.
And about bringing an over-the-top streaming service.
Yep.
So that'll be a game changer.
Well, especially if those apps allow live streaming. So, if you're able to stream NBC, ABC, et cetera, it'll be fabulous, for your own local area.
Sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Because, Apple knows where you are if you have an Apple ID, not so much an Apple ID, but if you have your credit card in your iTunes account, for example, they know where your address is. So it's not like they can't make sure that you're only watching ABC in Minnesota. So should be interesting.
Even if they just had a national feed of those or on demand or whatever, that would still be, I think, good enough for most people.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep, so it's going to be a big business, I think.
So the article that you put in here about Tim Cook on Apple's future, everything can change except values. One of the things that I still have been wanting to read about is, if you remember in Walter Isaacson's book on Jobs, that he had started Apple University, and it was a way to essentially have a curriculum that taught people the Apple way and how to look at markets and how to think about technologies and competition and everything else. And they don't really talk about that at all, not even in these kinds of articles. And I just wonder why. Maybe it's a big competitive advantage.
Yeah. Maybe. This was more of an interview than anything else.
Right.
So.
Right.
And it's interesting to see Cook being interviewed so often.
Yes.
Well,
and doing things like calling into Mad Money.
Yeah.
I mean, Jobs never would have done that.
Right. Yeah.
Nope.
Yep. Yep, so, he's being more open, the kinder, gentler CEO.
Right, right. Well, and then the flip side, there's a bunch of stories in the show notes here about Microsoft and Windows 10.
Why is that the flip side?
Well, because it's always been the flip side of Apple.
That's right. I thought it was fair and balanced. So you got to feel about the other guys.
That's us. That's what we do here.
Yeah,
fair and
we are. Yeah.
We are.
Yeah. But here's the thing is I am increasingly, I don't know if you guys know this, but I bought Apple or Microsoft stock.
Really? Recently? Yeah,
only,
you're the guy.
Maybe 6 months or 8 months ago, I bought a couple hundred shares, and it was because
proceeded to tank right after that.
That's okay. Yeah. I'm in it for the long haul. But the reason that I did was watching what the new CEO at Adela is doing and seeing all the different moves that are being made. And he is, frankly, doing some bold stuff. And, you know, Microsoft's not going to go away. I mean, in so many ways, when you look at how on the outs Apple was, and again, I was there when we, you know, just celebrated the hell out of the fact that we broke $6 billion in revenue for the year in 98, I think it was. And Microsoft, you know, they certainly still have their cash cows going that they can milk for a long time. And now this Windows 10, where they're going to, you know, allow free upgrades, you know, for actually registered users, are not going to allow pirates to upgrade. But, you know, they're really looking at making Windows more ubiquitous. And I talked to the guys at IoT Fuse, the Microsoft sponsor, about their support for embedded devices, and they have a lot of things with Windows 10 that will support Windows 10 embedded that will support extremely low power devices. And they wouldn't tell me any of the specs or anything, because I guess it's real confidential. They're holding it close to their vest, but I think we should expect to see some pretty interesting things coming out of Microsoft this year.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's why I stuck these in. I think they're making some very interesting moves, and they're acknowledging that upgrades of the OS to their existing customers, like Apple, they want to make it as easy as possible. So it looks like most people, if you have Windows 7 or 8, you'll be able to get a free upgrade to 10.
And there'll be one version.
Yep.
They just have such a great history of stepping on their own Johnson. I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll see what happens.
I think they're making some very interesting moves.
They're making interesting moves, but you think to yourself, what? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
What's the story about how their new scheme could become Google's worst Android nightmare? What the heck is that?
They're going to support Android, apparently.
Why wouldn't that be a good thing, I guess? Oh, well.
Well, what they're doing is they're making ROMs available of Windows 10 that run on many flagship Android phones.
Ah, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So you can upgrade for free. So
gotcha.
It's an interesting, kind of strategy there, too.
Well, listen, guys, I'm going to have to hop off because they want the room here at St. Thomas, but I'm going to head on to DevFest and I'll be here for the day. So we'll talk about it next week on the podcast, but also wanted to do one last plug. Yes, you have to hear it one more time to join us at Mobile March. Some tickets still available, but you can get them now at mobilemarch.com.
Next week, we
will see you guys next week on Thursday, right?
Absolutely.
You betcha.
Absolutely.
Right, so
wouldn't miss it for the world. Hey, by the way, what are you recording on today? Because it sounds fabulous.
I am.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Are you on your phone?
No, I'm on my laptop. So my MacBook Pro with my Plantronics headset.
It sounds really great, don't you think, guys?
Yep.
Indeed. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll go ahead and drop off.
All right. You guys have a great day. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, brother.
Yep. See you later, Phil.
So health concerns in wearable tech is another
This is that
story.
Nick Bilton story that everybody on Twitter got all up in arms about.
Right.
But I think it's if you take the emotion out of it's a good point. You know, all these wearable devices, will they, long-term exposure to your skin? Is there any radiation possibility or whatnot?
Well, what's interesting about that, Tim, is that there was a Wired magazine article probably 3 years ago, and it was all about headsets. And the woman that wrote it wrote about being over in Finland and being surprised that every single executive at Nokia wore a headset. They never put their phones up next to their head.
The Bluetooth? You mean the Bluetooth thing hanging out of your ear?
Or a wired one, or anything, right? So that they weren't. Now, I don't know if that was just a ease of use or cultural thing, or who knows? But she was asking him questions about brain tumors and things of that nature. So, but there still isn't anything. There's no data really that's permeating right. Stuff.
That's like going to a cigarette company and no one's smoking. Something's up.
right.
Which doesn't happen, by the way. It's like they all smoke like chimneys. Yeah. It's like, what? You would think that some of them would have wised up, but they haven't. Yeah.
Well, actually, I have a friend who has a guy that is really into holistic medicine who came to their house for a dinner party and just lambasted him for the fact that the house was permeated with RF radiation because of his Wi-Fi router, and was telling him, no, you should have Ethernet jacks in every room, and you should just never have this radio. And I just told my buddy, I go, hey, just wear your lead underwear, then you won't have to worry about it. So, I don't know. Well,
yeah, there's a lot of scare tactics out there. So does Nick Bilton have any scientific
No, and that was the point
data
of the story.
In this story? That's
the point of the story, is that there's not a lot of research yet.
Yeah.
So it's everyone on Twitter got all up in arms about that, but he didn't have much to work with. But I think it's a good message to kind of bring up, especially with the Apple Watch coming out. Hey, we got to look at this, and maybe there's something there. Maybe there's not. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, they love to pee all over Apple. The Times does. So this is probably their way to do that. I was going to say, the guys at Wearable World that have the big conference coming up, they probably are going to be all over this too. But, what I find interesting is how wearables is all of a sudden a subset or linked at the hip now with IoT. It's like, it seems like they're sort of, and we heard that coming out at IoT Fuse too. I mean, there was wearable stuff, part of the day there too. So it's interesting that all of this is coming together as one big gigantic hype trend.
Well, and it's really morphing into anything that's connected. So they include computers and tablets and smartphones and blah, 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 blah. It's like, no. Whoa. Slow down here a little bit. It's not quite that.
Yeah. Well, the term, we didn't just hear the term IoT, of course, on Thursday, but IOE, Internet of Everything. is the other acronym, and where does it all end,
Yeah. Well, I think it'll end with quantum communications, so that we're able to have the internet of the solar system and the internet of the galaxy. We'll be able to have real-time communication everywhere. I don't know.
I loved the way how somebody brought up, it might have been Joel Young in the opening keynote, pervasive computing. Somebody brought up pervasive computing. Remember that? That came out of Xerox PARC back in the 80s.
I'm going to put a link in the show notes to something called Ubicomp. So back in the 90s, I remember just reading about this back in the 90s and thinking, this is the stupidest name for anything. Ubicomp. Wow. Yeah. It sounds like a chocolate bar or something. But it's about ubiquitous computing. It's where computing is everywhere and anywhere and embedded, and you don't even know about it. And that was kind of the precursor to the whole Internet of Things, was Ubicomp. And computer scientists talked a lot in their white papers, which lasted really until probably 2006-ish, when the Internet of Things started to become the buzzwords du jour. But it was all about Ubicomp. And it's actually a pretty good description. But it does cover, it's the Internet of Everything. It covers everything. Anything that's connected, that has Well, no, I'll take that back. It's not anything that's connected. It's anything that's got computing in it. So it's not exactly the same. I'm so confused. I don't know what to do anymore. Oh, geez.
It's the ultimate acronym or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and then the other acronym that was that was brought out at the IoT Fuse event that some people may forget about is M2M, you know, machine to machine.
Machine to machine,
that
right.
Term's been around, that concept and technology exists. It's been around for many years, you know, that it's more the industrial internet, perhaps.
Well, and that's what O'Reilly, Tim O'Reilly, you know, who coined Web 2.0 and all of that. That's what he is hyper-focused on, which is industrial internet, because that's really, you know, that gets into the whole thing. I mean, because I follow the whole Internet of Things as a space, and you look at the moves that are being made by the supply chain company SAP and Philips and various Japanese vendors and yada, yada, yada. You look at all the moves that are being made, and it's almost all industrial internet focused. It's not consumer. It's not home automation. There's a lot going on there that we're all aware of, but mm-hmm. it's the industrial internet stuff, because that's where the really big money is whoever, you know, has breakout products that can follow stuff through the supply chain. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to Cub Foods and bought frozen vegetables, gotten them home, and opened up this opaque bag, and you look at the broccoli, and it's like, oh, geez. It's been gone through 3 or 4 freeze-thaw cycles because the pallet was sitting out on some loading dock. Who knows? and with the Internet of Things, the promise is there'll be a smart, low-power RFID tag on there that will also have temperature sensing and will send data back. And you'll be able to track not only the product, but also whether or not it's maintained ambient temperature, which is a big deal in pharmacy because of vaccines and everything else. So,
yep. Oh, yeah. And the whole issue of food safety is huge, especially in China. You know, I was talking to you about the smart chopsticks that are being developed in China because, you know, there's a large part of the populace over there that is very concerned about where did this food come from, where was it grown, under what conditions, and pretty soon there's literally going to be sensors and chopsticks. And then somebody, I tweeted that, and somebody said there already is a fork with a sensor
right.
over in France called Happy Fork.
Well, and
H-A-P-I.
there's also a fork that and spoon that counteracts Parkinson's tremors.
Huh.
And it's got an accelerometer in it, and it actually modifies it counteracts the tremor in real time so that the spoon or fork stays stationary. It's really fascinating. I'll see if I can find a link and I'll put it in there.
You know, talking about industrial internet, GE is really big time into industrial internet. Have you met a guy named Pedro Medina yet?
No.
He came out of GE and he started a consulting company called Haystack Media. And he's more about big data, but he's got a background in industrial internet too. I can't believe he wasn't at the IoT Fuse event. But anyway, he's kind of played in that whole realm. You'll have to meet him sometime. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, we should have probably talked about this, Tim, before when we were talking about the new Apple TV thing. But I thought this was a really interesting article about from the Wall Street Journal. Did you put this in or Graham?
I did.
Okay.
And because this sort of thing, this, you know, using managed services to deliver streaming video, which they talked about in the context of Showtime, HBO, and Sony, that just announced a over-the-top service this past week, will be illegal if the FCC gets their net neutrality rules in place.
Well, but here's the flip side that they didn't talk about in this article, which is Comcast and their massive investment in the cable head end for server storage, because they know what's coming. They don't know which way it's going to go. But, you know, HBO, Showtime, Sony would be able to store their programming at the cable head end and get around this. So they wouldn't have to centrally store. They could essentially use Comcast as a content delivery network and have it stored at all the server locations at the cable head end and stream from there. And
that's theoretically possible, but Netflix has not been able to get in there using their appliance.
Right. Right.
So that may be an issue, but this story is basically about peering, and the way that I read the net neutrality rules, peering will be non-neutral. And unfortunately, that's the way that the internet has worked since inception. And if you make peering illegal, then all sorts of bad things are going to happen, I think, with online streaming video.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Interesting. I still don't, as I said last week, I don't think these rules will be put into to law. So, you know, I'm not that worried about it, but I think we're in an era where some things will be changed that will not be good for web startups and for consumers of internet media like us.
Yeah. Well, you at the very bottom of that article, I just want to throw out one thing, which is about the new online video entrants also want to protect their users from monthly data usage caps. For now, those thresholds seem high. Comcast has been testing a data plan of 300 gigabytes per month, even though the cable giant has said that internet customers' median monthly usage is 20 to 25 gigs a month. Well, I can tell you that I've got a Comcast business class connection, and I have routinely exceeded 500 gigs a month. And well, it's because I've got three Apple TVs, I got a Roku, and we've got, you know, computers and iPads and phones and all, you know, we're always constantly using data, all of us. And then, you know, I send huge files with, you know, product imagery in it, you know, that can be, you know, 10, 15 gigs, do that once a week probably. So, I mean, it's... I can see people blown by that cap in a heartbeat. Tim, you're probably there.
Probably. I don't know. I don't think that Charter has a cap, or if they do, it's, they haven't alerted me that I'm using more, but we do a lot of streaming, you know, just like you do.
Yeah.
So is it that time for the cool thing of the week?
It is that time for cool thing of the week. Yes. So,
yes, sirree.
Tim, you brought it up, buddy boy. You ought to start.
All right. So this is one that I had in my my bag for last week, but I used something else. I forgot what it was. Anyway, it's called the Microbit. This came out a couple weeks ago, but the BBC is developing this with a bunch of other companies, and it's basically a really, really small Raspberry Pi that they're going to give to every 7-year-old in the UK.
Oh, gosh.
About a million of them. And it's very similar to the Raspberry Pi, although it's much smaller, where it plugs into your HDMI, into a monitor or a TV, and you can, you know, program on it. You can do all sorts of productivity stuff. I mean, it's a very low-powered thing, but it's still interesting that something like this is still happening. And because of the size, you can make it into a wearable if you want. You know, it's running an ARM processor.
And this so it'll is run very cool.
It'll run Linux and whatnot.
Oh,
so
my
anyway,
gosh.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a Raspberry Pi in the sense that it's a full computer, but it looks like an Arduino because it's really, really small.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the Microbit, let's keep an eye on it because they still haven't finished it.
Wow. Well, boy, talk about providing the tools for kids to innovate. Because, you know, if you get one of these things and your friends start using it, and pretty soon you're learning from each other, and they're maybe doing it in schools and everything else, and who knows, maybe UK will be the new brain trust for the Internet of Things.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have a lot of programmers.
Yeah, sure. No kidding. No. Graham, what's your cool thing?
Well, you know, I was in the Uptown Apple store just yesterday, as a matter of fact, at the Genius Bar, and with another very smart genius. They never fail to amaze me every time I go in there. But we're talking about, I was in there for my iPad, and I was just lamenting, you know, God, I was flipping through my apps. I said, God, I wish Instagram would come out with an app, you know, designed for the iPad. And he goes, oh, you got to get PadGram. And I go, what? I never even knew about PadGram, and it's great. I love it. It's a wonderful way to view Instagram and follow your feed, you can't shoot pictures from your iPad and post on Padgram. It's not for that. It's a viewer app. But, oh, it's great. It's almost, you know, like a Pinterest-style layout. But, you know, I don't know why, with all the money that Instagram has, why they haven't come out with an iPad app, but they haven't. They want you to do it on your phone, you know, I guess. That's the one you carry in your pocket. So, but yeah, I immediately got Padgram, and I love it. It's he says, oh, yeah, it's my favorite app. You know, so that was good enough for me.
Well, so my little gadget is, you know, we've all seen the dash cam videos, especially from Russia, because everybody's got one there, because there's so many scams going on with people jumping on your car, pretending they got hit and all of that. And I've been very, very seriously interested in dash cams. And so I'm talking to a buddy of mine who tells me about this G1W, which actually isn't available right now. They're out of stock. There's a new G1W dash C, but it's like $60, and you have to have
$51.
Well, $51 at Amazon is a GW1, and the GW1 dash C is like $9 more. But then you have to add a micro SD card, and I know I've got probably two of them, you know, that are a gig or two a piece. And the way a dash cam works is it just keeps recording, right, until you stop it. And it'll just record and then re-record and re-record until you something happens, and then you can stop the recording so you can get the video off of there. But just a really fascinating thing. Now, normally these things are like, you know, $300 or $400. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Wirecutter's review of it. So because I poked around and I found this, and they do have some links about where to buy. So be careful where you buy, because there are some knockoff ones. Supposedly, but the Garmin one's like $399. So this is, this is apparently very good quality, and, so could be cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Yep. At some point these will be required.
Well, I just wonder. Yeah. Except they'll probably have two cameras, one to point at you to make sure you're not falling asleep.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Google Dev Fest is going on. Today, Saturday the 21st, but what else is coming up? The Treehouse Health fundraising. We haven't talked about that for a little bit.
Yeah, that's Tuesday evening, and it's open to all startups. Actually, Tuesday afternoon, 4:30 to 6:30, I think. Open to any kind of startup, not just healthcare startups.
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because I thought it was just healthcare startups.
No, they open up their events to anyone who wants to come. Okay. And so some lawyers presenting and a panel about things to just be aware of as you're going out to raise money. There are a lot of pitfalls and you know, potential problems. So it'll be a good education, and it'll be, you know, food and drink and lots of fun. And excellent. Then right after that, Mobilize actually kind of backs right up to that. Mobilize Minnesota. And I forget where they're doing it this time. Are they doing
Day
it
at Block
the Day Block? Okay. Yeah. The second floor event center. That's where they did the last one. When remember when Phil Soren's company, Vidku, presented? This time they've got Red Current, which is a really interesting calendar kind of a app startup that pitched at Mini Demo.
Yep.
Did you guys see there?
I did.
I thought their onstage pitch was one of the better ones. I mean, it was, they did a really good job, a good stage presence with that thing. And the guy who founded it is an interesting cat. I think he's got like a background as a trader or a Wall Street background of some sort. Or something, and he's got quite a team pulled together and raised a bunch of money, and you know, it sounds like a really cool app that I've never seen one like this myself. So
well,
you know,
they
get a chance to.
Yeah, they say that in their About Us that they help businesses, music venues, schools, theaters, breweries, cities, churches, yada yada yada, publish, manage, and communicate events of any size. So when I look at the app and I look at the website specifically right now, is it doesn't appear that they've got all the event management stuff built out, and it'll be interesting to see what they offer
right
going forward.
Yeah, well, you know, if they can do better than Eventbrite, because they're, I mean, yeah. From a UI standpoint, I mean, there are some definite improvements that can be made, you know, but I don't know, Eventbrite has such a head start over so many others, I think, and there are a ton of others, so, but right. We'll see. You know, it could be a good one. And then, you know, what else is coming up after Mobile March on Thursday, of course? Well, Tech City's on the 27th. Are you guys going to that at Carlson?
I'm going to try, but that's a tough time for me on the 27th. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, so, Friday afternoon is kind of a different time to do an event, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, that looks like a good one.
Then Mini Bar on April 11th. And Mini WebCon on the 13th. I have not talked to anybody that said they're going this year.
Yeah, I don't hear much about it. I haven't been getting any emails on that. I don't know who runs it now, but our friend who used to run it at the U, you know, he went over to Capella,
right,
and doesn't run it anymore. And so I'm not really sure who's running that thing. But it's been going on for several years, and they tend to draw some pretty good national speakers.
Well, yeah, that's when we got together with Doc Searles,
mm-hmm.
because he was the keynoter.
Yep.
But our buddy Paul DeBettings is one of the speakers.
Oh, really?
Michael Roventine, Kate O'Reilly. So, I mean, there's a lot of folks that are. So I'll put. We've got a link to their. Eventbrite. But I'll put a link to the schedule too in the same area.
Yeah, we might want to get over to that one on a Monday, right?
Yeah.
Yep. They always do it on a Monday. Yeah. And then what's this Twin Cities Tech Pulse thingy on the 21st? I need to be filled in on that one.
I don't know.
April 21st.
Tim, did you put that in?
I did not.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I need to get up to speed on that one. That's a ways out, though. I guess 30 days out. So yeah. we got time to...
You know what's so amazing, you guys? I mean, do you remember in 2008 being at Mini Demo and talking about doing Minivate? And it was because we knew that there was stuff going on because we were talking to all these different people, but... It just, there was no critical mass, there was no way to communicate and all that. And just look at all the stuff going on, all the events oh my gosh, it's just amazing.
Yeah. There's so many, you can't keep up on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no shortage of, you know, people keep asking me or, you know, I'm running into these people that are trying to get networked into the startup community. It's like, start attending events. You know, you've got a ton of them to choose from.
No kidding.
And if you can't get out there and meet people at these, well, then something's wrong, you know, because there's no shortage whatsoever. So they're doing this one at the St. Paul River Center, but I'm not really sure who's behind it, Tech Pulse. But anyway, check it out at TwinCitiesTechPulse.com.
Yep. Well, and we'll talk about this stuff and any other hot events next week on...
Minivate.
Oh, go ahead, Tim.
Well, I think we got through it.
Everybody knows what it is. Minivate Gang Podcast. Okay. All right. Take care.
Have a good week.
See you guys. Talk to you later.